be Luke. He could be calling from the hospital.
It's not Luke, Clary said, sounding more sure than she felt. He'd call my cell, not your house. Simon looked at her a long moment before sinking back down on the rug beside her.
If you say so.
She could hear the doubt in his voice, but also the unspoken assurance. I just want you to be happy. She wasn't sure happy was anything she was likely to be right now. Not with her mother in the hospital hooked up to tubes and bleeping machines, and Luke like a zombie, slumped in the hard plastic chair next to her bed. Not with worrying about Jace all the time, and picking up the phone a dozen times to call the Institute before setting it back down, the number still undialed. If Jace wanted to talk to her, he could call. Maybe it had been a mistake to take him to see Jocelyn. She'd been so sure that if her mother could just hear the voice of her son, her firstborn, she'd wake up. But she hadn't. Jace had stood stiff and awkward by the bed, his face like a painted angel's, with blank, indifferent eyes. Clary had finally lost her patience and shouted at him, and he'd shouted back before storming off. Luke had watched him go with a clinical sort of interest on his exhausted face.
That's the first time I've seen you act like sister and brother, he'd remarked.
Clary had said nothing in response. There was no point telling him how badly she wanted Jace not to be her brother. You couldn't rip out your own DNA, no matter how much you wished you could, no matter how much it would make you happy. But even if she couldn't quite manage happy, she thought, at least here in Simon's house, in his bedroom, she felt comfortable and at home. She'd known him long enough to remember when he had a bed shaped like a fire truck and Legos piled in a corner of the room. Now the bed was a futon, with a brightly striped quilt that had been a present from his sister. And the walls were plastered with posters of bands like Rock Solid Panda and Stepping Razor. There was a drum set wedged into the corner of the room where the Legos had been, and a computer in the other corner, the screen still frozen on an image from World of Warcraft. It was almost as familiar as being in her own bedroom at home, which no longer existed. So at least this was the next best thing.
More chibis, said Simon gloomily.
All the characters on screen had turned into inch-high baby versions of themselves and were chasing each other around, waving pots and pans.
I'm changing the channel, Simon announced, seizing the remote. I'm tired of this anime. I can't tell what the plot is and no one ever has sex.
Of course they don't, Clary said, taking another chip. Anime is wholesome family entertainment.
If you're in the mood for less wholesome entertainment, we could try the porn channels, Simon observed. Would you rather watch The Witches of Brestwick or As I Lay Diane?
Give me that. Clary grabbed for the remote, but Simon, chortling, had already switched the TV to another channel. His laughter broke off abruptly. Clary looked up in surprise and saw him staring blankly at the TV. An old black-and-white movie was playing Dracula. She'd seen it before with her mother. Bela Lugosi, thin and white-faced, was on screen, wrapped in the familiar high-collared cloak, his lips curled back from his pointed teeth.
I never drink wine, he intoned in his thick Hungarian accent.
I love how the spiderwebs are made out of rubber, Clary said, trying to sound light. You can totally tell. But Simon was already on his feet, dropping the remote onto the bed.
I'll be right back, he muttered.
His face was the color of winter sky just before it rained. Clary watched him go, biting her lip hard. It was the first time since her mother had gone to the hospital that she'd realized maybe Simon wasn't too happy either. Toweling off his hair, Jace regarded his reflection in the mirror with a quizzical scowl. A healing rune had taken care of the worst of his bruises, but it hadn't helped the shadows under his eyes or the tight lines at the corners of his mouth. His head ached, and he felt slightly dizzy. He knew he should have eaten something that morning, but he'd woken up nauseated and panting from nightmares, not wanting to pause to eat, just wanting the release of physical activity to burn out his dreams and bruises and sweat. Tossing the towel aside, he thought longingly of the sweet black tea Hodge used to brew from the night-blooming flowers in the greenhouse. The tea had taken away hunger pangs and brought a swift surge of energy. Since Hodge's death, Jace had tried boiling the plant's leaves in water to see if he could produce the same effect, but the only result was a bitter, ashy-tasting liquid that made him gag and spit. Barefoot, he padded into the bedroom and threw on jeans and a clean shirt. He pushed back his wet blonde hair, frowning. It was too long at the moment, falling into his eyes, something Mayris would be sure to chide him about. She always did. He might not be the Lightwoods' biological son, but they'd treated him like it since they'd adopted him at age 10, after the death of his own father. The supposed death, Jace reminded himself, that hollow feeling in his guts resurfacing again. He'd felt like a jack-o'-lantern for the past few days, as if his guts had been yanked out with a fork and dumped in a heap, while a grinning smile stayed plastered on his face. He often wondered if anything he'd believed about his life or himself had ever been true. He'd thought he was an orphan. He wasn't. He'd thought he was an only child. He had a sister. Clary. The pain came again, stronger. He pushed it down. His eyes fell on the bit of broken mirror that lay atop his dresser, still reflecting green boughs and a diamond of blue sky. It was nearly twilight now in Idris. The sky was dark as cobalt. Choking on hollowness, Jace yanked his boots on and headed downstairs to the library. He wondered as he clattered down the stone steps just what it was that Mayris wanted to say to him alone. She'd looked like she'd wanted to haul off and smack him. He couldn't remember the last time she'd laid a hand on him. The Lightwoods weren't given to corporal punishment, quite a change from being brought up by Valentine, who'd concocted all sorts of painful castigations to encourage obedience. Jace's shadow hunter skin always healed, covering all but the worst of the evidence. In the days and weeks after his father died, Jace could remember searching his body for scars, for some mark that would be a token, a remembrance to tie him physically to his father's memory. He reached the library and knocked once before pushing the door open. Mayris was there, sitting in Hodge's old chair by the fire. Light streamed down through the high windows, and Jace could see the touches of gray in her hair. She was holding a glass of red wine. There was a cut glass decanter on the table beside her. "Mayris," he said. She jumped a little, spilling some of the wine. "Jace, I didn't hear you come in." He didn't move. "Do you remember that song you used to sing to Isabel and Alec when they were little and afraid of the dark, to get them to fall asleep?" Mayris appeared taken aback. "What are you talking about?" "I used to hear you through the walls," he said. "Alec's bedroom was next to mine then." She said nothing. "It was in French," Jay said. "The song." "I don't know why you'd remember something like that." She looked at him as if he'd accused her of something. "You never sang to me." There was a barely perceptible pause. Then, "Oh, you," she said. "You were never afraid of the dark." "What kind of 10-year-old is never afraid of the dark?" Her eyebrows went up. "Sit down, Jonathan," she said. "Now." He went, just slowly enough to annoy her, across the room, and threw himself into one of the wing-back chairs beside the desk. "I'd rather you didn't call me Jonathan." "Why not? It's your name." She looked at him consideringly. "How long have you known?"
"Known what?"
"Don't be stupid. You know exactly what I'm asking you." She turned her glass in her fingers. "How long have you known that Valentine is your father?" Jace considered and discarded several responses. Usually he could get his way with Mayris by making her laugh. He was one of the only people in the world who could make her laugh.
"About as long as you have."
Mayris shook her head slowly. "I don't believe that." Jace sat up straight. His hands were in fists where they rested on the chair arms. He could see a slight tremor in his fingers, wondered if he'd ever had it before. He didn't think so. His hands had always been as steady as his heartbeat.
"You don't believe me?"
He heard the incredulity in his own voice and winced inwardly. Of course she didn't believe him. That had been obvious from the moment she had arrived home. "It doesn't make sense, Jace. How could you not know who your own father is?"
He told me he was Michael Wayland. We lived in the Wayland country house.
A nice touch, said Maris.
That, and your name. What's your real name?
You know my real name.
Jonathan Christopher.
I knew that was Valentine's son's name.
I knew Michael had a son named Jonathan, too. It's a common enough Shadowhunter name. I never thought it was strange they shared it. And as for Michael's boy's middle name, I never inquired. But now I can't help wondering. What was Michael Wayland's son's real middle name? How long had Valentine been planning what he was going to do? How long did he know he was going to murder Jonathan Wayland?
She broke off, her eyes fixed on Chase.
You never looked like Michael, you know, she said. But sometimes children don't look like their parents. I didn't think about it before. But now I can see Valentine in you. The way you're looking at me. That defiance. You don't care what I say, do you? But he did care. All he was good at was making sure she couldn't see it.
Would it make a difference if I did?
She set the glass down on the table beside her. It was empty. And you answer questions with questions to throw me off, just like Valentine always did. Maybe I should have known.
Maybe nothing. I'm still exactly the same person I've been for the past 7 years. Nothing's changed about me. If I didn't remind you of Valentine before, I don't see why I would now.
Her glance moved over him in a way as if she couldn't bear to look directly at him.
Surely when we talked about Michael, you must have known we couldn't possibly have met your father. The things we said about him could never have applied to Valentine.
You said he was a good man. Anger twisted inside him. A brave shadow hunter. A loving father. I thought that seemed accurate enough.
What about photographs? You must have seen photographs of Michael Wayland and realized he wasn't the man you called your father.
She bit her lip.
Help me out here, Jace.
All the photographs were destroyed in the uprising. That's what you told me. Now I wonder if it wasn't because Valentine had them all burned so nobody would know who was in the circle.
I never had a photograph of my father, Jace said, and wondered if he sounded as bitter as he felt.
Maris put a hand to her temple and massaged it as if her head were aching.
I can't believe this, she said, as if to herself. It's insane.
So don't believe it. Believe me,
Jace said, and felt the tremor in his hands increase. She dropped her hand.
Don't you think I want to?
She demanded, and for a moment he heard the echo in her voice of the Maris who'd come into his bedroom at night when he was 10 years old and staring dry-eyed at the ceiling, thinking of his father, and she'd sat by the bed with him until he'd fallen asleep just before dawn.
I didn't know, Jace said again. And when he asked me to come with him back to Idris, I said no, I'm still here. Doesn't that count for anything?
She turned to look back at the decanter, as if considering another drink, then seemed to discard the idea.
I wish it did, she said.
But there are so many reasons your father might want you to remain at the Institute. Where Valentine is concerned, I can't afford to trust anyone his influence has touched.
His influence touched you, Jace said,
and instantly regretted it at the look that flashed across her face.
And I repudiated him, said Maris. Have you? Could you?
Her blue eyes were the same color as Alec, but Alec had never looked at him like this.
Tell me you hate him, Jace. Tell me you hate that man and everything he stands for.
A moment passed, and another, and Jace, looking down, saw that his hands were so tightly fisted that the knuckles stood out white and hard like the bones in a fish's spine.
I can't say that.
Mara sucked in her breath.
Why not? Why can't you say that you trust me? I've lived with you almost half my life. Surely you must know me better than that.
You sound so honest, Jonathan. You always have. Even when you were a little boy trying to pin the blame for something you'd done wrong on Isabel or Alec. I've only ever met one person who could sound as persuasive as you.
Jace tasted copper in his mouth. You mean my father.
There were only ever 2 kinds of people in the world for Valentine, she said. Those who were for the circle and those who were against it. The latter were enemies, and the former were weapons in his arsenal. I saw him try to turn each of his friends, even his own wife, into a weapon for the cause. And you want me to believe he wouldn't have done the same with his own son? She shook her head. I knew him better than that. For the first time, Maris looked at him with more sadness than anger. You are an arrow shot directly into the heart of the Clave, Jace. You are Valentine's arrow, whether you know it or not. Clary shut the bedroom door on the blaring TV and went to look for Simon. She found him in the kitchen, bent over the sink with the water running. His hands were braced on the draining board. Simon? The kitchen was a bright, cheerful yellow, the walls decorated with framed chalk and pencil sketches Simon and Rebecca had done in grade school. Rebecca had some drawing talent, you could tell, but Simon's sketches of people all looked like parking meters with tufts of hair. He didn't look up now, though she could tell by the tightening of his shoulder muscles that he'd hurt her. She went over to the sink, laying a hand lightly on his back. She felt the sharp nubs of his spine through the thin cotton t-shirt and wondered if he'd lost weight. She couldn't tell by looking at him, but looking at Simon was like looking in a mirror. When you saw someone every day, you didn't always notice small changes in their outward appearance. Are you okay? He turned the water off with a hard jerk of his wrist. Sure, I'm fine. She laid a finger against the side of his chin and turned his face toward her. He was sweating, the dark hair that lay across his forehead stuck to his skin, though the air coming through the half-open kitchen window was cool. You don't look fine. Was it the movie? He didn't answer. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have laughed, it's just... You don't remember? His voice sounded hoarse. Clary trailed off. That night, looking back, seemed a long haze of running, of blood and sweat, of shadows glimpsed in doorways, of falling through space. She remembered the white faces of the vampires, like paper cutouts against the darkness, and remembered Jace holding her, shouting hoarsely into her ear. Not really. It's a blur. His gaze flicked past her and then back. Do I seem different to you? He asked. She raised her eyes to his. His were the color of black coffee. Not really black, but a rich brown with a touch of gray or hazel. Did he seem different? There might have been an extra touch of confidence in the way he held himself since the day he'd killed Abaddon, the greater demon. But there was also a wariness about him, as if he were waiting or watching for something. It was something she had noticed about Jace as well. Perhaps it was only the awareness of mortality. You're still Simon. He half closed his eyes as if in relief, and as his eyelashes lowered, she saw how angular his cheekbones looked. He had lost weight, she thought, and was about to say so when he leaned down and kissed her. She was so surprised at the feel of his mouth on hers that she went rigid all over, grabbing for the edge of the draining board to support herself. She did not, however, push him away, and clearly taking this as a sign of encouragement, Simon slid his hand behind her head and deepened the kiss, parting her lips with his. His mouth was soft, softer than Jace's had been, and the hand that cupped her neck was warm and gentle. He tasted like salt. She let her eyes fall shut and for a moment floated dizzily in the darkness and the heat, the feel of his fingers moving through her hair. When the harsh ring of the telephone cut through her daze, she jumped back as if he'd pushed her away, though he hadn't moved. They stared at each other for a moment, in wild confusion, like two people finding themselves suddenly transported to a strange landscape where nothing was familiar. Simon turned away first, reaching for the phone that hung on the wall beside the spice rack. Hello? He sounded normal, but his chest was rising and falling fast. He held the receiver out to Clary. It's for you. Clary took the phone. She could still feel the pounding of her heart in her throat, like the fluttering wings of an insect trapped under her skin. It's Luke calling from the hospital. Something's happened to my mother. She swallowed. Luke, is it you? No, it's Isabel. Isabel? Clary looked up and saw Simon watching her, leaning against the sink. The flush on his cheeks had faded. Why are you...
What's up?
There was a hitch in the other girl's voice as